call your attention to one announcement. Dr. Jesse Fletcher of the Foreign Mission Board will be on the campus today. In fact, I've already seen him come in here. Anyone who needs to confer with him, please come by the Student Activities Office to make arrangements for an appointment. May we unite our hearts in prayer. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the afflictions and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Therefore, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. For if we live after the flesh, we shall die. But if we, through the Spirit, do mortify the deeds of the body, we shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. Yield yourselves therefore unto God as to those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. For we are not under the law, but under grace. Amen. Abbiamo trovato America is an Italian proverb that pretty well expresses the European idea about certain aspects of our life here in the United States. Translated literally, it means we have found America. Translated psychologically, it means we have hit it good. We've made it rich. And this is independent of any natural capacity or expenditure of energy, we've just got a windfall. We have found America. But this proverb speaks of a materialism which, by its very silence, calls our attention to many other values in this land. It fails to mention ideals, cooperation, personalities, responsibility, freedom, rights, constitutions. It fails to mention many aspects. And as I have been here in the United States now for about 12 months, I have, in a certain sense, sought to probe this proverb, "Abbiamo trovato America." And yet, the truth is, the very evident materialism of this land, while having an attractive power for our European colleagues, certainly does not have a lasting power. Or, to paraphrase Toynbee a bit, holy rights are a great deal more powerful war cry than happy America. Now, this morning, that is the thing that I am really interested in. That is this fact that lasting power resides in expressing ultimate significance, sacred, holy rights. We have found America, even we might say Christian America, but any word, this is what I want to say. That is that even Christian America will have ultimate significance in that degree that it has ultimate concern for individuals as persons. Milton Eisenhower has sounded somewhat of this same note in the title of his book, "The Wine is Bitter." This title comes from another Italian proverb, "Il vino è amaro, ma è nostro." The wine is bitter, but it is ours. It is the proud assertion that arises from poverty that prefers to have the acid wine instead of a strong, heady drink, even if it must be accepted as a handout. Eisenhower goes ahead to say that organizations and societies in general are classified according to statistics and categories. But the ultimate problem is always the same. It is a question of people. This finding of an ultimate significance in the concern for an individual person calls for our own ultimate involvement. A farce or a pretense is quickly discovered. Some 8 years ago, after reading an editorial in a Milan paper which referred to America's economic imperialism, speaking about how America, with her gifts, intrudes upon the sacredness of the personalities of the receivers. Upon reading this, I went to the man, the professor, that later became president of the school of which I was president at that time. And I asked him, by what right or by what distortion of facts can the very countries defeated in war, but assisted by America toward economic recovery, now talk about her imperialism? He looked at me. I think it must have been fully 3 minutes. My face began to get whiter, I'm sure, as the blood drained out of it. And his face began to become more and more colored. And finally, looking me right in the eye, he said, "By what right do you ask such a question? By what right do you see only the need of others? By what right do you remain blind to the fact that America needs strong allies. But in heaven's name, let us be allies, not bellboys. The scales began to fall somewhat from my own eyes. This was man's universal plea, and not just one man's specific plea. Here was a man strongly lashing out with a pathetic plea to be treated, recognized as a full human being, a person to be restored ultimately to his full significance. Now, Jesus had a certain way of stating this truth. Actually, if we think of one of the key verses of the book of Mark 10:45, in a context of lordship, one seeking to be the greater over the other, Jesus said, as it is among the Gentiles, it shall not be so among you. And then he said, why? He said, for the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life, his being, as a ransom for many. Now, this particular verse is seemingly treated in a lighter strain in Luke. In fact, it is passed over, but in a parallel context, which is found in Luke in the 22nd chapter, we find that apparently Luke is talking about dominance through service. This is a context in Luke of the Lord's Supper, connected likewise with the reign of God. In the midst of this context, we find specifically in Luke and the 22nd chapter and the 28th and the 29th verses an assertion that is not found elsewhere in our scriptures. And this indicates that Jesus enters into a covenant with, or rather, allows others to enter into the covenant established by God. That is, those others who stand firm with him, with Jesus, in his trials, attempts to establish God's reign, to establish lordship through servant being, which is utterly illogical according to man's viewpoint. If we read these verses now, Luke 22:27 and following, Jesus asks, who is greater? The one stretched out at the table or the one that's serving? Surely, it is the one that is stretched out there. And yet, contrary to that which I've just said, yet I, here I am in the midst of you as one who is characterized by going on serving. And yet you, here you are, the ones characterized by going on remaining with me in my trials, in my attempts to do what? To establish God's reign by means and a manner that is utterly illogical. Kingship through servanthood. Lordship through servant being presence. Since you are here with me in my trials and are steady and constant with me in this, then I covenant unto you a kingship, just as my Father coveted me a kingship. But it is a peculiar kingship. It is one that is through servant being. I am now within just less than a month leaving to return to Italy. Now, my presence in Italy is not understood by me at all as being there to render a specific service of teaching, let's say, Greek or something of that nature. It is not principally an extension of the helping hand to some underprivileged, for this alone would be mere service, utilitarian service, and the cross is not a utilitarian service, nor is the cross obedient servanthood primarily, even though it be included. It is primarily life, servant being life. And any missioner, whether he be in this land or anywhere else, should be motivated, should be driven on by this conviction that the servant being presence is functional, even in this society as we have it now. Wherever it might be or whatever the circumstances might be. A man's response to such a mission is an affirmative response to the invitation to life. The life that is the only life, that of the servant being presence. It is a commitment to exercise the servant being presence in whatever circumstances he may find himself. In faith, knowing that thereby God's restoring reign is facilitated. That reign that abolishes bitterness from the wine of life. Abbiamo trovato America. About 12 months ago, we found America in the midst of strife concerning racial legislation. Strife in the House and the Senate concerning academic freedom. Striving among the people with a concern for secular advancement. In these tensions, there are rights being expressed. The knights that tilt on both sides of the question can render each and every one of these rights merely profane by a participation that is void of their personal understanding of the servant being presence. May I illustrate? Just after I came into Italy, into America, the Newsweek published a survey of 291 graduating seniors from the various universities. One 26-year-old history major said, "Our intellectual forebears have left us without roots. Darwin, Marx, Freud have robbed us of all our certainty. We are a generation that wants to believe, but left without roots, robbed of all principles, unmotivated by inspiration, traveling without direction, what can we do but adjust?" Now, once again, here is a comment that speaks more eloquently by its silence than it does by its admissions. By its very oversight, it underlines that which I too have found here in America. and that is the ideals of academic freedom that reign in a land that believes in the responsible constancy of its professors and students. Our universities are not controlled by some government agent. And note, every man mentioned, Marx, Darwin, Freud, there's not one of them that is an American. And yet a propaganda office at the port of our understanding does not exclude these from our consideration. Naturally, the question is this not dangerous? And in fact, it is asked in Europe, how is it that your universities are not controlled by your government? How is it? Is it not dangerous? Yes, it is dangerous. And this is not just an academic question either. It's real danger. Just this morning, the radio spoke of five black Muslims who stopped for speeding, applied a meat cleaver to the offending officer. Eisenhower would say, as we seek to find America, that the ultimate concern for the individual as such will remove the bitterness of the life. For the professor in Italy, the student in America, the Negro of Africa, and each of them as you or I, each of us stand in need of exercising this servant being presence. Now, this presence means ultimate significance for you, for me. But you nor I can have ultimate significance by taking peanut risk. And that's just about the evidence, the extent of our involvement in many issues. John Taylor, speaking from Africa, reminds us, though, of the tremendous power of freedom. A woman prisoner in Uganda moved to a new station, found herself in a prison without walls, without bars, and without a fence. There, for a few days, she could not stand the strain. She asked to be put again behind confining walls. For literally, the tension of self-restraint was too great. She was about to break. And if she broke, she would jeopardize the entire experiment. She was convinced not once but many times to remain on in this experiment. And then it finally dawned on her that she was accepted as a responsible person. She learned to bear the burden of being trusted, the tensions of being deeply respected. She had to respond, and she did. Deeply and completely, totally. And her influence, her servant being presence, was extremely influential on the other prisoners. Now, at intervals, she certainly had heard the chaplain of the prison talk about salvation and the cross, but I doubt if she made any connection between these and her present situation. Her salvation came in a secular way, much the same as that of Zacchaeus. But it was all there. Forgiveness of sin, the cost of it, the justification, the new life in the Spirit. She came to know later, certainly, that Christ had healed her. And yet the point is this, that her minister was a woman warden. A woman warden that preached through the exercise of servant being presence. Exercising this in difficult circumstances, the bitterness of categorization was removed because an individual was treated as a person. Irresponsible liberty is dangerous.
but responsible freedom restores. And similarly, I would like to point out to the professor in Italy, to the 26-year-old history major, to the black Muslims of the West Coast, that freedom with its dangers is the product of the liberated soul that knows Christ. I would like to say that all of those things which we feel that are endangered by it can hardly be classified as principles. Eternal truths remain standing even when there is the academic earthquake, even through the shaking of the foundations. That which is destroyed is the prejudice, not the eternal truth. Roots are not abolished thereby. That history student was in error. It wasn't roots. It was perhaps dogmatism that was abolished, but not roots. Inspiration still glows on. And thank God for that fact. And it can glow in you as any person. Inspiration still glows. The illusions perhaps vanish. An imposed direction perhaps does, but the creative one remains. And so I return to Italy, proud to say, I have found America. Abbiamo trovato America. Decent housing movements here. Scholastic research in our institutions, battle for desegregation, hospital therapy clinics, schools for the blind, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could just keep on. These are not battles, and do not treat them as such, as statistics, as categories. These are not battles for abstract justice. But they are battles for the restoration of individual personalities. Everything that truly and deeply liberates and restores human lives and human situations is, I believe, a miracle of God's healing, a sign of God's strong, loving will to make men whole. And evidence that God does have reign, lordship, and kingship through the servant being presence in myriads of his sons and daughters. May God be with you as you seek to express the servant being presence in whatever circumstances you find yourself. May we pray. Father, drop thy still dews of quietness till all our strivings cease. Take from our souls the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace.